You're listening to UnConcast on the Georgia Podcast Network, featuring unconference sessions and other related discussions from around the Southeast.
This discussion is going to be about podcasting and entrepreneurship, probably more on the entrepreneurship than podcasting, hopefully. It's at least 2 hours, maybe three. We're not podcasting this. I'm just kidding. We may be podcasting this. I don't know. So my name's Jeff Haney. I guess some people would call me a serial entrepreneur. This is my eighth company. I did a very similar presentation, or no, I wouldn't say presentation, because that would assume that I'm going to be presenting something. I'm not going to be presenting anything. My goal today is really moderation, is really to kind of activate the discussion and hopefully get everybody talking about how we can make money, more money, create innovative ideas, and become better entrepreneurs at it. A little bit about myself. Like I said, this is my eighth company. I recently sold a company that I started here in Atlanta called Vocalocity. We raised about $15 million. We were a technology software company that provided software to companies like Microsoft and IBM and others. It was speech recognition technology. I now have started a company. It's a high-end web development company focused on Web 2.0 technologies. And we work with fairly large public companies, helping them get into the Web 2.0 from a technology, from a rich internet application technology standpoint, how they can look at the web more as a two-way web versus a very static marketing vehicle type web. I did a similar discussion about 3 or 4 weeks ago at SoCon, and it was very interactive. There's probably a couple people it looked like who were there at that attendance. Every time I do one of these, it's always different. The content's always different because it's really about the audience. It's about the experience and the people in the audience and what they can contribute. So this is not going to be PodCamp. Really is an unconference. Although we've seen a lot of presentations and we've heard sort of a one way dialogue with some presenters. But in my time today, I'm going to really only facilitate the discussion, help ask questions, and I really want to hear from the people out there. What are they seeing? What are they hearing? What are they doing? And what do they need? So I guess I'll start out the conversation by asking a question. How many people would consider themselves entrepreneurs in the audience? Okay, just about everybody. There's a few people that aren't. Okay, of the people who aren't, didn't raise their hand, what would you consider yourself? Unemployed. Okay, some entrepreneurs would say that's what entrepreneurs are, right? Unemployed, people refuse to go to work for other people. That's at least what I say. I don't want to work for anybody else, so I can always go work for IBM. I always tell my friends that who want to be entrepreneurs. There's always plenty of big companies. They're not really going anywhere, so you can always go get a job, worst case. One of the things that I've really noticed and I speak a lot about is I've been part of raising or have raised personally about $50 million in venture capital over the last 6-7 years. And the marketplace for entrepreneurs is really changing. And some by design, as the dot-com explosions happen, there's sort of been this different change that's happened in capital markets, or the lack of capital markets, I should say. And then in the South particularly, we've had a depression of funds and depression of investment, both on the small angel side, but also on the larger side, private equity and venture capital funds. And that's probably a good thing. I would be one of the people that would say that's a good thing. I think at the end of the day, entrepreneurship is about, you know, finding a way, a path to growing a business and forcing yourself to actually create a product or a service that generates revenue. And a lot of people get kind of past that when they raise, you know, big money. Or when they see companies like YouTube, who has $12 million in revenue and gets bought for some crazy $1 billion more than I've made, and probably all of us in this room have made. And there's different reasons that companies do that, and certainly that's important. What I'm really interested in, what I'd like to start the conversation is talking about how things have really changed. We talk about social media. We talk about podcasting. Podcasting certainly is a small part, a bigger revolution that's happening in the web and in the world. Some people call it Web 2.0. Some people, a lot of my clients come to me, think about Web 2.0 as technology. It's sort of the application of technology, and that's certainly a part of it as well. But one of the things that I've noticed is that you really can, with the democratization of tools and podcasting sort of as a net result of that, and sort of this distribution change of the internet, people like Dr. Shaffrin here can create, you know, probably a business and a radio show that rivals some of the largest AM stations here in town. We've just looked at some of the data. Some of the data here from, what is it, Arbitron, and looking at WSB and some of the other, which is very inefficient, as we all know. We can create, with the tools that are available today and the lower production costs, we can create businesses that don't need huge amounts of capital. They don't need you to mortgage your house off, potentially. They may not even need you to require you to start, full-time. Maybe you can do some of this part-time. And that's really changing. We're really seeing a big change in the venture capital markets because there's less demand from entrepreneurs saying, I have to raise a lot of capital before I can actually create a business. And we're certainly seeing enough businesses being created that don't require a lot of capital. They don't require intense amounts of people to run them. And what I'd like to start off as saying is, what are you guys seeing out there like that? And what are the opportunities that you see that like that, where you can participate? Maybe you're not doing this, or maybe you'd like to. And anybody have anything that they can kind of point to, or something they're doing that doesn't require a lot of capital? Go ahead. We got a mic. I think there's the Mr. Atlanta Peace mic man.
This is Ken Brown, business coach, E3 Seed Link. My passion is entrepreneurship, and the second passion is connecting people. And part of the how I define my business is E3C means entrepreneurship, empowerment, and evolution. And the C's stand for connect, collaborate, and create. And so the second part of that is connecting people. And I wanted to do something online, being unique as a business coach. So I decided I'm going to create group coaching sessions. But then I started thinking, people really need leads. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a business. People need leads. So I created an online networking session that I do on Tuesdays from 8 to 9. And so what we do...
Is it live online?
It's live. Mm-hmm. And people call in. I have specific questions that I ask. You have 60 seconds, not 5 years or 5 minutes or 15 minutes, to answer the question. And after each cycle, we just go around and say, what had the most impact? What did you learn? Who are you connecting with? And that's how I generate the discussion. And so we may have two or three questions, maybe four questions. One could be, what is your passion? What are you excited about this week? Another could be, what's a success story? What makes you unique? And then we just start having conversations. Another question I ask is, tell me something that I don't know.
And are these entrepreneurs?
Yeah, these are all entrepreneurs.
Wannabe entrepreneurs? Or
no, these are entrepreneurs.
These are people that are entrepreneurs?
Yeah, I try not to have anybody that works for a company.
Right.
Because I want to keep it entrepreneurial. And in the last 3 months, I've connected about 170 people.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of a new way of doing social networking, more of an interactive social networking. And where, at the end of the day, social networking is about connecting people. Okay? It's great.
Don't forget to introduce yourself.
Why don't you say your name and a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Andy Greider. I am a marketing and business growth consultant. I work with Lee Cantor as a co-host on Uniqueness is Power, which is a radio show. It's you can find it at www.uniquenessispower.com. Easy to hit there. And what we try to do is this is the fun part, is I'm a big believer in helping people first before I ever ask for anything else. And what the point of the show is to provide some marketing tips, some advertising tips. That's a lot of my background in journalism, copywriting tips, things along those lines. Also to bring in somebody who is a business boosting tool. We've had people debunk credit card myths for the entrepreneurs out there who are scared to death of the monthly statements they get that they do not understand. And I'm right there with you. So it was a great episode for me. I learned a lot too. And we have on them what we also call Unique of the Week. And Unique of the Week is a company that's put lipstick on a pig. They've found some way to stand out from the crowd. And they're a great way for the other entrepreneurs out there to get an idea of what they can also do. And that's ranged everything from Cartridge World, or actually they're coming up, everything from Best Buy for Business to people like Hello World, or VM Direct is the other name for that company. We've had on a couple local companies too, small entrepreneurs that had some really great ideas, Short and Sweet Studios, other people like that here in Atlanta that you might know of. And it's been a really great educational experience, but it's been a way to get things out there and really start kicking the entrepreneurial ball around and getting people to start talking. I've gotten emails from a lot of people from all around the country, a guy in Port Townsend, a person in Auckland, New Zealand. You know, it turns out everybody's challenges are pretty much the same, and a lot of good discussion there. So
now, this obviously is sort of you do the show not as a full time job, but sort of as a. Tell us a little bit more about what your daily job is.
My daily job is actually with a company called Carol White, and Carol White is a marketing and business growth consultancy on a larger level. My heart is in entrepreneurship. It's in small business, so that's why I do the show.
Okay.
The show is there for anybody that does marketing or advertising or wants to boost their business, quite frankly. There's tips there for everybody. But what I do during the day there, we work with probably a range of $10 million to $800 million a year companies. The kind of people that you were mentioning are kind of going to be there.
Yeah.
And
Do you guys think that it's easier to be an entrepreneur today in sort of this 2.0 society, or is it harder? Okay. That's a perspective.
It's
My name is Kent Lester, and I have a website called selfmadehomes.com, and I'm doing a little bit of social web development. And I've also been an entrepreneur and started 5 companies of my own, and I'm in my 50s, so I've been around a lot longer than some of you guys here. And to answer your question, I think it's vastly easier to be an entrepreneur in the internet age than it has been in the past, because the cost of entry into an idea is so much lower now than it has been in the past, so you're also more able to take risks, risks that you might not be able to afford to take in the old wetware world. Now you can take that risk because your cost of entry is so low. So I think it's a tremendous, tremendous change over the way things have been for the past 2.5 decades.
So one of the questions I get a lot by business people that are looking at entrepreneurs who have internet business models is, because the cost is so much lower, what happens to kind of competitive dynamics if you can't create a barrier to entry? Because, you know, any kid with, you know, any 21-year-old with some good software can build a website, or, you know, anybody can be a podcaster on the other side of the mic. How does the competitive landscape change for entrepreneurs in sort of this new world?
It becomes much more competitive, and it becomes an evolutionary competition.
It becomes more competitive, and it becomes an evolutionary competition, because it does put more pressure on everyone. Because if you come up with one good idea, if someone comes up with your good idea 0.1, then suddenly you're the old idea and they're the new idea. So there is a little bit of this new kind of risk that no matter how good of a job you do, if someone comes along tomorrow and does the job just a little bit better, you may not have the type of security. But the flip side of that is, if your cost to start your company was lower to start with, then you're risking less.
Right.
If that occurs.
So we got a couple of comments. I see people raising their hands. So why don't we start?
Sure.
Get back over to you.
Hi,
Andrew.
I'm Robert Joseph, and I'm from here in Atlanta. And one of the things, there are actually two things that I wanted to say. One is, I think that open source software has made a huge difference for the entrepreneur. And I just want to mention that, because there are a lot of people out there that are just programming and building things, and they're building stuff that's really good. Some of it's better than the stuff that you actually pay for. And so I think that has helped to lower the barrier of entry, at least in the web space, for entrepreneurs. On the comment about the barrier of entry being low, and so then that provides more competition for you, I actually think that if you do it right, there is a barrier of entry. I remember the speaker this morning was talking about, you know, other people have come along and done Flickr, but he's going to stay with Flickr because that's what he started with and that's what he loves. So I think that there is something to be said for being there first and capturing a large segment of the population, because I think that everybody, even people that have a high degree of technology savvy, are being bombarded by new stuff, and they're having a lot of trouble in just putting it all together. And so when you get with something that you like, that you understand, that works for you, even if something better does come along, there's still a barrier of entry, of intellectual entry, of going to that next thing. So yeah. I think that that has
every time people talk to me about being first, first is sometimes important. But I love the example of Google. I mean, come on. We search engines were so passe when Google came along, and everybody knew AltaVista and Yahoo and Hotbot and everybody else. And then, of course, Google showed up on the scene, and you know, they've forever changed our lives. You know, so better, you know, choice, I think, ultimately does win. And competitively, you have to continue to improve. You know, I think a lot of companies, Microsoft probably being one of them, have built a nice business around kind of status quo and minor kind of improvements for their end customer. And I think other companies have started to challenge that because better is important and choice is important.
Yeah, but for every Google, there's, you know, 10 billion other people that have tried that whole space.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's best, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
PCR,
data.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Carter Harkins with crowdabout.us. It's a site that makes podcasts interactive. We just launched a public beta and kind of inviting people in to try out the service and see what we've got here. It didn't cost us a whole lot to launch. In terms of technology, it's not that expensive. So, you know, our barrier to entry was really low. I will say, though, that the hardest part for us is keeping people's attention. Because everybody expects to be bombarded with the newest site this week. Right. So they'll sign up, create an account, come in, check it out, explore it, add their podcast, and, you know, try the tools out and see how it makes their podcast interactive. And then something else happens, and oop, they're off to chase that rabbit. And, you know, finding an audience that sticks with a product. And I'm not saying, you know, perhaps we need to evaluate our product and see why it's not sticky. And I'm not saying we're having a problem yet. We're not. But, you know, I mean, there's that constant, as an entrepreneur who's trying to be self-aware and constantly looking at the product to see how can it be improved and how can it change and follow the patterns and, you know, trying to predict the direction that the consumer wind is blowing. You know, there's this, I mean, partly the barrier to entry, the lack of a barrier to entry is a good thing, at least for us. I like the fact that I'm going to put, you know, I'm expecting to put a year, year and a half, 2 years into this, at the end of which, if it isn't a success, I can close my doors, not have to sell my house or my child, and, you know, and still go on to start another company and not lose my shirt in the process. So I'm happy about that. I mean, you know, that's my exit strategy is looking pretty good, even if it fails. So, but there's also this, you know, the shakeout happens really quickly now because all these companies just throw up a new website, try a new idea, see if it works, see if it sticks, throw it up against the wall, see if it sticks. And, you know, I mean, the shakeout, every day it seems like a company that I thought was really going to be something, I turn around and I can't find it on the web anymore. It's right. Gone. And, you know, no trace. And so, you know, the shakeout happens quicker. Competition is fierce, but sometimes that battle doesn't drag out forever. It's a fairly quick storm.
So is there anything that's changed between kind of yesterday and today, between differentiating the one that becomes the Google and the one that becomes the, you know, the AltaVista that sells their technology?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, we've been approached by VC, you know, money and basically wanting to get behind it. And we've decided to stay small for a reason, you know, strategic reason in our case, but, and I won't get into it. But essentially, you know, we're looking at, okay, if we bring in money and an executive team that is a proven, you know, has a proven track record of taking an idea and making it big, would that be advantageous for us at this point? Versus if we grew it a little more organically for a little bit longer, had bigger numbers in terms of usership to prove the concept and then take it to a VC. And, you know, I mean, we're trying to, you know, navigate. I mean, I've never started anything and had people try to throw money at me. So this is a different issue for me. I mean, it is different. I've started a lot of businesses. This is the first web business that I've really started. So I don't know what do you do?
So is anybody, obviously, Is anybody in the room think he's crazy? Who would go for the big money? Who said, "Oh, just take the money and"?
And to be honest, I don't know how much money we're talking about because we never got to that point. And we're good friends with this guy. And honestly, what I hope to get from him more is just mentorship.
Right.
And he's pretty patient.
Andrew's been dying behind you there. He's going to talk about taking the money. Have fun for a couple of years, air out chairs.
Andrew Lund
offices.
Andrew Lundy, my venture is Denizen Box, and I've gone the last couple of years, gone to a lot of these entrepreneurship sort of meetings and courses and things, and just to kind of talk to your point a little bit, although I can't say I've had the opportunity to turn down money. It seems that the traditional path that they kind of lay out for entrepreneurship is kind of faltering to me right now. That they say, have a great idea, put together a big business plan, do some market research, as long as you don't say the market is X big and we are going to get 1% and you should give us money, then somebody will fund your capitalization cost and you're off to the races. It seems now, especially in the Southeast, with the venture money being very pensive, that everybody wants you to take on the burden of proving your business entirely, such that you've got a customer base, you have, revenues that you've gotten and established without anybody's help.
So they want a business.
They want a business already built.
Imagine that.
They want a business already built. And
the reason the venture capital was created was to grow businesses, not...
Right. And that, once you've figured it out, proven, taken all the risk, and then they want to come in and get a piece of your pie. But the I think it's easier to get attention where in the internet today where the barriers are low. I mean, the old, nobody knows you're a dog on the internet kind of rings true. It's easy to present yourself as more than you are.
Right.
If that's what you need. And I think that rings true. I also wanted to talk to a little bit about the barrier to entry with my product. It's really nothing that anybody can't go out and replicate. And I think about this all the time. It's like, well, what's the barrier to entry? What makes it better than or differentiate it more so than what somebody else could do? And the answer I come up with myself is that it's a package. What I'm selling is not the end product. It's how I got there quickly. And it's the service of packaging that experience. And I just want to get some commentary from other folks. It's like, is that enough to build a business?
It's also the passion you have behind your invention that's so valuable. We have this first, and then back to you.
I'm Penny Haynes of First Podcast Publishing. My podcast is Brainstorm Business Podcast. What my passion or my addiction is reading all the business magazines, Fortune, Fast Company, Inc., all of those.
I'm glad you're confessing that.
and then to go through, find out what the new ideas are, the new strategies, the new technologies, and then I talk about them and then think about how I can apply those to my business or people can apply those to their businesses. So a lot of the stuff you guys are talking about, like the VC stuff, I've been reading about this kind of thing, how it backs off. But in regard to the low entry barrier, you're right, everybody can pop up, but not everybody will stay.
Yeah.
And just like joining the National Association of Women Business Owners, you have to be in business 3 years before you can do that. So there is something with having the history, like you said, because the people who will purchase my podcast directory software, which there is no other, right now, but sure enough, somebody could in the next second create one, but it's because some of these people might recognize me from some of the other podcasting I do or the international podcasting expos. So I think that really does have something to do with it in a market where their dog can put up a website. you building a web presence, meaning if they Google your name, what are they going to see? Because I hear that's the first thing people do.
I mean, I think at the end of the day, people buy from people they know and their social networks. I mean,
or
social
feel
networks,
like they know.
Or at least feel like they know and trust. Trust is created in lots of different ways.
Yeah.
But through brand is one way of creating trust, but also through your social network.
The hard thing is when you like come up with something, an idea, and I know I've known Carter for a little while and through the sequence of business stuff, but the first thing my parents say is, well, did you patent it? And I'm like, well, it's just a website, Mom. Yeah,
5 years
later. Yeah, I know. But it does still, you think to yourself, will somebody else come up with it? Well, if they do, they're going to have to know the people you know because it's your market. If you've created a product for the people you already spend every day with, then you've got the leverage to be able to market it to them. And hopefully you'll also have the insight to know what it is they want in the first place in this product because you've been spending so much time with them. So yeah, the barrier's low, thank God, and so is the price point, so we can try it out. But why should I spend all my time and money building it and let a VC come in afterwards when, since the price point's so low, I can do this myself? I'd rather take out of my equity line, put some money on the line for myself so that when it does go big, I get to keep it.
Right.
So.
There's a couple, and Ben, and a couple of people over here.
Penny, I don't think you have anything to worry about. You're the one that's facilitated this wonderful event this weekend.
Hi, I'm Steve Ely. My company is Escape Artists, which is really just kind of an envelope around the podcasts I do, which are largely, in as much as I have a business, those are my business. And you were asking about, you know, is experience enough? Is the customer experience enough? That's really all I've got with mine. I'm not a marketing person. I'm starting to learn now. I need to learn how to become a bit more of one and become a bit more of an entrepreneur and business person. That's kind of been an alien perspective to me. I just started, you know, reading stories aloud in podcast form, you know, buying rights from authors and asking people for money, for donations to do it. And people gave me donations. And, you know, I've been in the black and I've been with more money than I expected to get from people, you know, offering, you know, contributions to support my podcast. And so now I'm trying to figure out, you know, it hasn't been enough for me to make a living on right now, but it's starting to become non-trivial. So I'm trying to figure out how to expand that and how to get more opportunities out of what I've already been doing. But in terms of barriers to entry is not something I thought about when I did this. I'm like, okay, I like to read things out loud. So I just started doing it. I haven't worried about anyone competing. People ask me, how can they do this? I help them. I say, you want to see my contracts? I'll show them to you. I'll show you exactly how I got my site set up and, you know, my structure and all that stuff, because I figure, you know, the space is so wide open right now with what I'm, especially, you know, podcast fiction. It's not like, you know, someone else doing it means that no one's going to listen to my stuff.
Right.
You know, people are going to make the value judgment, and all I have to do is just keep making sure I do it as well as I can do it. And having other people in that field only brings more audience members in.
Right.
The more people out there doing what I'm doing, the bigger the total audience becomes, and that only helps me. So why would I be worried about, you know, is anyone going to compete with me? I should be helping them compete. So
is anybody worried about competition? The businesses that they created? I mean, not, you know, obviously practical competition, but I mean, is there anybody worried that, you know, if I don't get patents, if I don't create some sort of competitive advantage, then, you know, it keeps me up at night. A couple of people over here. Andy.
Let me jump in. Andy Greider again. It's an interesting perspective. Does it keep me up at night? Absolutely not. Because as Steve was just saying, I think there's an awful lot of space out there. A book that I'm a real big fan of is Long Tail.
Yeah.
And it talks an awful lot about the niche side of things and where the internet takes it. And if you sell pink bowling balls, well, you know, you've got 10 people who like pink bowling balls and they're going to be talking to their, you know, 20 friends who are in the pink bowling ball club. You start picking up 30 or 40 customers, and then all of a sudden your business just balloons into the 150 people in the world who that's what they're into, and maybe you expand into orange and blue, you know, after that. But the simple side of it is somebody earlier mentioned, what does it take as far as success? Well, that depends on your definition of success also. You know, for most of us, we don't need to make $15 million or $25 million. It might be nice, but that's not what it takes to run a business in large part. And I think entrepreneurs often have a much better idea of that than folks that are working on a daily, you know, a daily living type of basis and, you know, collecting that paycheck week to week.
So that's my take.
Anybody want to comment?
Justin?
Other hands.
Justin Davis from Davis on Draft. One thing that I think is good about the low barrier to entry that I think is going to help out, is already helping out now and will only continue to do so, is that what that low barrier of entry does across the board is it forces content to become the most important thing. You know, a few years ago when a select few amount of people could build a website and make it look nice, the people with the slick websites got the business because, you know, if it looked good, people went there. Now that anybody can go online, anybody can podcast, and anybody can put up a blog that looks as good as the next person, I think it takes the focus back to content, which is where it should be, and back to the product itself, and forces more concentration on product and service development than, you know, flashy, fancy presentation and such.
I really knew the world was really changing when a few weeks ago I was watching a newscast on a major cable, you know, news channel, and they were actually interviewing, I actually counted that day, three or four bloggers as their expert sources. I thought, wow, you know, the world is really changing when those people, I mean, these are individuals, certainly they're experts in their own domain, but the content really does rise to the top, and the quality of the content and the expertise. And I thought that was really interesting that the major news channel, and this is pretty common, I guess, these days. I mean, you're seeing a lot more, especially around politics. So, all right, I think we have time for maybe one more, you know, one or two more people to maybe comment about anything they want to comment about. You got a person in the back. Tell us what you do. How are you making your big money? What's the big idea?
Well, my name is Dave Owen, and I've had a web development company for 12 years.
Wow.
So we started right as Netscape came out of beta, and I saw the internet, and I said, this is what I want to do. So I had to make a decision at that point. You could do dial-up, you could do hosting. Those, to me, seemed like they did not have the barriers to entry because they would become very commodity-like, which they have. What your barrier to entry is your creativity and how you package it. We sell business websites. We don't go in saying, you need a website, you know, with all this technology in it. No, you need a website that fits your business model, that's going to help you achieve your mission. And you can also raise your billing rates if you get on that track and talk to the CEO and start getting plugged into that message. But that's the way you have to do it. And as far as the barriers to entry, I think we're kind of, when we talk about that, we're talking about, you know, some sort of industry to take over the world. But there's plenty of space out there for people who don't want to take over the world and make a comfortable living and be an entrepreneur. I've found it in doing business web development, and it continues to grow. I don't have a mansion or anything like that, but the barrier to entry is just the creativity and not necessarily, you know, viewing everybody as your competitor, because there's plenty of space out there and plenty of business. There's not really a boundary to who's going to take over that market.
So we got one more over here. I think we're probably right. As we kind of transition on that, I met a guy that here in Atlanta that has about 2 years ago created a very, very, very simple website, like a one-page website, and he does quotes. He basically harvests quotes from all over the web, and people submit quotes, you know, notable quotables type thing. And he's, because he's been out there so long and he's pretty well indexed, he's like number one or two on Google. He makes $8,000 a month in Google Ads. And he does nothing. I mean, literally, it's a website that feeds itself, and he basically provides content and creates, he's created a kind of a simple mechanism for people to be able to exchange quotes for him, put in his database. And, you know, certainly that's, you know, it's not millions of dollars, but I mean, for something like that, that's a pretty substantial amount of money. And it's probably not defensible. I mean, he says, you know, I mean, this is easy to replicate. Anybody could tomorrow do it. And in his case, he's got Google sort of as his competitive advantage over somebody else. But
I'm Aaron Brazell with Ideas Unleashed. We're a nonprofit organization that helps other nonprofits connect and communicate with amongst themselves, between other similar organizations, also with just regular people. I absolutely believe that it's all about the package. It's all about the customization. We're not doing anything that anybody cannot go out and do on their own cheaply and or freely. We use open source tools. We use Skype. Everything we have, we've gotten online, like I said, for low or no cost. But organizations really like it when you sit down and say, what do you want this to look like? What do you want this to be? And I think there's just so much space for not only that customization, but also for training. We're finding that as we expand, we just started in August, and as we expand, there are more and more people who want more and more training on how to use Web 2.0 tools. They are getting bombarded every day with so many different sites that they don't know what's best for them. They don't know what to choose. There's always going to be space for that. And I think that's, you know, the low entry to the low barrier to entry has just really made that. That's really the only thing that's made that possible.
Yeah. Yeah. So my final comment kind of is on the barrier to entry is, at the end of the day, you know, expertise really, especially the lower the barrier to entry, the more people that can do it, and the more stuff that's not as good out there that you get. And we get a lot of people to come to us and say, you know, I've hired the, you know, 18-year-old kid that knows PHP and created my website, and now, you know, I want somebody that really knows what they're doing. And we encourage people. I mean, when they come to us and they say, well, I've got India, or I've got, you know, a young kid or a friend or somebody else, and we say, you know, please go use them, because it'll be much better when you come back, and you'll be much more appreciative of, you know, our expertise and our skills. And so I think that's, at the end of the day, it is about packaging, marketing. It's about your expertise. And at the end of the day, it's about quality of content. So, all right. Thanks, everybody. I think the next discussion will start in a couple minutes. Thank you.
The song you heard in this podcast was Garden by Cargo Cult, available only on Magnatune.com. Thanks for listening to UnConcast on the Georgia Podcast Network. If you have recorded or are planning to record a discussion that you think would make a good episode of UnConcast, email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com to learn how you can submit it.